Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, President Donald Trump has his first face-to-face meeting with Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Sounds like Putin got the best of him. And then Trump says they're going to actually have a cyber security task force with the person who actually hacked our election? Drug test in the White House needed real quick. All right, we'll break it down with a reporter with Associated Press who actually, oh my God, was on the trip, plus Congressman Al Green. All right, folks, in Louisiana, a 27-year-old black man fatally shot in the back by a sheriff's deputy last week. In an interview, Dejon Guillory's girlfriend says he was on the ground with his hands behind his back. When the deputy shot him multiple times, she was the one who got arrested. At least 8 people are in custody in the beating death of a 22-year-old African-American tourist outside of a bar Friday in Greece. Kari Henderson's family says the recent college graduate was on a photo shoot prepping to launch a new fashion line. We want answers to his death. Black Twitter unleashes on activist and philosopher Umar Johnson after his appearance on the radio's The Breakfast Club. He is here in the house, and we'll talk with him about everything from his views on interracial marriage to his educational degrees. Also, boxing for fitness. Ladies are lacing up boxing gloves for a full body workout. That's our topic. Today's Fit Lift Win. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Y'all, President Trump met with Vladimir Putin on Friday at the G20 summit in Germany, telling the Russian leader he was honored to meet him. The 2+ hour talk had both sides claiming victory over the much anticipated discussion that included Russia's meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Trump tweeted this after the meeting, quote, "I strongly pressed President Putin twice about Russian meddling in our election. He vehemently denied it." Moving on. Putin told reporters he asked me questions. I answered. I clarified, and I think that he was satisfied with my answers. The White House discounted an earlier claim by Russia's foreign minister that Trump accepted Putin's assurances that Russia had nothing to do with the U.S. election. It would have been nice to hear President Trump actually discuss that himself, but considering he was the only G20 leader not to hold a news conference after the talks, explains a lot. So he took to Twitter. Putin and I discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit. I can't even get it out. So the election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded. That immediately drew derision. Even Republicans said, what the hell?
It's not the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but it's pretty close. When it comes to Russia, he's got a blind spot. And to forgive and forget when it comes to Putin regarding cyber attacks is to empower Putin.
I am sure that Vladimir Putin could be of enormous assistance in that effort since he's doing the hacking.
And then the New York Times dropped this bombshell report. Donald Trump Jr. set up a meeting in Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer with connections to the Kremlin in June of 2016. Son-in-law Jared Kushner was there, along with then-campaign chairman Paul Manafort. Don Jr. released this statement to the Times after pleasantries were exchanged. The woman stated that she had information that individuals connected to Russia were funding the Democratic National Committee and supporting Mrs. Clinton. Her statements were vague, ambiguous, and made no sense. No details or supporting information was provided or even offered. It quickly became clear that she had no meaningful information. Yet the day before that, he actually said something differently but said the meeting was about adoption. Well, then when 3 White House people, aides, came out and said, well, that was a lie, he then came out with a new statement on Sunday saying, well, I actually met with her because she had information about Hillary Clinton that could have aided our campaign. Yet the same Donald Trump Jr. in May said no such meeting ever took place. Joining us by phone from Houston is Congressman Al Green. Also joining us in the studio, Darlene Superville, White House correspondent for the Associated Press, who traveled with the president to Germany. Darlene, I'll start with you. Again, having no news conference to explain even what took place is absolutely crazy. But these back and forth, differing accounts of what took place in that meeting, just makes no sense.
It was startling to the White House press corps that traveled with President Trump that the White House just wouldn't at all address the question of what he said to Putin in the meeting, what Putin said to him, who said what. And it leaves the impression that Putin is speaking for the president, which it's hard to understand why they're leaving it at that.
And normally you have national security advisor in the meeting. Normally you have their aides who are taking copious notes to fully explain what took place. Then, of course, we have Trump saying one thing, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson saying something else. Mm-hmm. And then he says, well, we'll discuss a cyber security, whatever you want to call it. Then Steve Mnuchin said it's a fantastic idea. Then Trump tweets 13 hours later, it's never going to happen.
You're asking me to explain that.
And I'm sure you're sitting there going, really?
We all are. And that's sort of the way this White House operates, right? Things are said, and then they're left for the president to come out on Twitter to try to clarify, and then he tries to clarify and then walks things back or changes things around. He promised to be a different kind of president, and he is.
Former CIA Director John Brennan also weighed in. He did not hold back.
Or he met with Mr. Putin and talked with him at some length, which I'm glad he did. He said it's an honor to meet President Putin, an honor to meet the individual who carried out the assault against our election. To me, it was a dishonorable thing to say.
Also, what we don't know in this meeting, he said, I asked him a couple of times about the issue of Russian meddling. Then Tillerson says, it's time for us to move on.
Well, this White House has always wanted to put that issue behind it and move on. And so by being able to sit down with President Putin in Germany at the summit, they can now say that they've addressed the issue and can move on.
Congressman Al Green, are you buying this nonsense?
Hello, good morning to everyone. I absolutely don't buy this nonsense, and I think that's a pretty good way of putting it. The president is consistently inconsistent. This is a president who claimed that he had a relationship with Putin for many months and, of course, later on denied having any relationship at all. What bothers me about this meeting with Putin is not what was said, but what they're saying wasn't said. It's hard to imagine that Trump, Putin, and Tillerson, along with Lavrov, met and didn't discuss sanctions. Russia wants the sanctions off. Tillerson was a former CEO of Exxon, and Exxon wants the sanctions off. It just does not make sense that this could happen and they not discuss these sanctions. I'm also concerned about the way we've conducted ourselves while we were there. 19 other countries are in the climate change accords. We're out. We couldn't get anything done on North Korea, no help there. And we now have agreed to work with the nation that has hacked into our system, created havoc, and we're now agreeing to work with them to prevent such a thing from happening again, which is inconceivable.
Darlene, can we expect any sort of explanation this week from this White House? I mean, the last time this president even talked to somebody who wasn't on Fox and Friends has been a little, 3 months ago?
Well, we certainly can try to get more details today if the White House holds a briefing, and we won't find out about that until about 9 o'clock.
And we won't know if it's an on-camera briefing or if it's going to be audio only or CNN will hire a sketch artist again.
That's true.
All right. Darlene, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
You certainly have one of the toughest jobs trying to cover. I'll just leave it at that. Congressman Al Green, I want to go to you, final comment as well, and that is this latest report with Don Jr. saying one thing, then another, clearly somebody's lying.
Without question, somebody's lying. And the concern that you have to have is that they met in Trump Tower. You've got the campaign manager there, Manafort. You've got Kushner, who's the president's son-in-law. And then you've got a Russian lawyer who has known ties to the Russian government. They meet to discuss dirt on Hillary Clinton, according to Trump Jr., and they end up discussing adoption. Now, that makes no sense. They continually engage in these non sequiturs. They bring up things that make no sense to justify some of the things that, in my opinion, are very harmful not only to what happened in the election, but to the country. This seems to be a means by which they have these back channels to talk about things that can be very harmful to our country in the long run. My hope is that we'll get some more information on the meeting, and I hope that Kushner himself will lose his security clearance. He should not have a security clearance if he's engaging in these kinds of activities.
All right, Congressman Al Green, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Joining us on our panel, A. Scott Bolden, attorney and former chair of the D.C. Democratic Party, Lauren Victoria Burke, political analyst and writer for NBC Black, Eugene Craig III, CEO of the Eugene Craig Organization, Maryland Republican Party official. Gentlemen, Lauren, gentlemen, ladies, anybody.
The president
is on his typical campaign this morning, tweeting again against the press, because that's what the president is about. He's about branding against the press, because he knows once the truth comes out, he's in big trouble. The thing that he can't stop, obviously, is Bob Mueller's investigation, which is probably going to blow the lid off this thing. But when you have your campaign manager and your son meeting with somebody with regard to getting dirt on Hillary Clinton, and then the next month a bunch of DNC emails comes out like less than 30 days later, like everything that they do pairs up with colluding with the Russians. I mean, it's as simple as that. And can anybody imagine Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton having a meeting with Vladimir Putin alone without any other U.S. officials in the room? What type of conspiracy theory that would kick off?
No, seriously. No,
unbelievable.
Or put it this way, and paraphrase. Phrasing, you know, Ryan Miner, a political blogger in Maryland, you know, the Bush administration going to Bin Laden and say, did you not do 9/11? Bin Laden say no. And we say, okay, let's form an anti-terror organization together. It's laughable.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
This is laughable. This is laughable. But also, I would take it a step further. I think this is another example of Paul Manafort maybe covering his tracks with
this.
Scott Lawrence, of course. Fox and Friends has had a piece 44 minutes ago. The mainstream media is neglecting their duty to represent the public. They failed to represent half of the country. Donald Trump retweets that. Uh-huh. Then, of course, they accuse James Comey leaking to a friend contained top secret information. He retweets that. Then he goes, James Comey leaked classified information to the media. That is so illegal.
But he did not. And that's why it wasn't illegal. But guys, here's the thing. Why did we believe that Donald Trump was going to go to this meeting with Putin and stand up for the American people?
Hold up. We didn't believe it. Remember, 94% of black women did not vote for him. 88% of black men. We didn't believe him.
So, but the press's expectation is that he was going to get in this meeting, at a meeting where Putin lies and says he didn't do it. Donald Trump lied to the American people and said, listen, it could have been anybody. And then you had these two liars together. And one thing, when you got two liars together,
somebody gonna lie.
Without a doubt.
That's why you use the hashtag, Trump Lies Matter.
But he and his Secretary of State couldn't even get the story right
on.
I mean, it's like they can't even lie consistently. This thing with Fox. Fox is nothing but an extension of White House comms. That's it. All Fox is doing is helping the president brand. That's it. I mean, that's the news organization that is Fox News.
Yesterday morning, Nikki Haley comes out and says, you know what? Russian did it. Russia did it. Don't believe the president. Reince Priebus comes up behind her and says, oh, Russia did it. Don't believe the president.
And the president believes that.
And the president believes it.
But believes what?
You know, why I can't do a press conference.
Which is why they have to explain
this.
Real quick, I got to do this.
The security thing, doing the security probe that they're not doing right now, in my opinion, is like the fox and the farmer getting together and asking the fox to watch the hen house so he doesn't kill any more chickens.
No, that's exactly what it is. Let's go to Louisiana, where Sheriff Jeffrey has been placed on administrative leave after fatally shooting an unarmed black man. Deshaun Guillory's girlfriend, who was on the scene, says he was laying on his belly when he was shot. Police say 27-year-old Deshaun Guillory and his girlfriend, DeQuince Brown, were out on an all-terrain vehicle early in the morning of July 6. They were going frog hunting at around 4 a.m. and were pulled over by Evangeline Parish Sheriff Deputy Paul LaFleur. He asked for ID. They didn't have any.
An altercation occurred, and at which time Mr. Guillory was shot and he was pronounced dead at the scene. The deputy received injuries as well.
Brown told her attorney that the altercation was a verbal exchange and the then physical fight between Guillory and the deputy sheriff, who pulled his gun on them and ordered them to the ground. She says Guillory was pleading for his life.
They were both on the ground. Guillory was on the ground on his belly, with his hands behind his back. The officer had a gun trained at Guillory's back, maybe a foot or two from Guillory's body. They were still arguing back and forth, but Guillory was on the ground as directed. His hands were behind his back. He was not resisting. All of a sudden, a shot rang out.
Guillory was shot three more times. The injuries suffered by the deputy allegedly came from Brown, who leaped onto his back and bit him to keep him from killing Guillory. Louisiana State Police are investigating. Coming up next on News 1 Now, we will talk with Reverend Dr. William Barber about the Senate's health care bill. It is not dead. Don't believe the hype. He has his thoughts on that. Plus, we'll talk about, the beating of a black man in Greece. Plus, Dr. Umar Johnson is here. He got lit up by black Twitter after his interview on The Breakfast Club. A lot of folks had lots of questions. Well, we'll ask those questions and get his answers right here, News 1 Now on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Later in the show, we'll talk about the beating death of a black man, recent college graduate from Austin, Texas, in Greece. A stunning, stunning story. And why is it that American isn't as outraged as they were about the guy who died from North Korea? You notice you've heard nothing from the White House about that, so we'll talk about that. But coming up next, we're going to have our simulcast with the Tom Joyner Morning Show, talking with Reverend Dr. William Barber. Folks, pull up Tom Joyner, please. Pull him up. Thank you very much. Here we go. Tom, Sybil, Arsenio.
Hey, what's up, man?
Rolling.
Here we go. Here we go.
William Barber's on the phone.
Yes, sir.
Also, folks, this is Alpha Week here on News 1 Now. Scott's a La Kappa. The Alpha have our convention this week. We'll be broadcasting live in Baltimore on Friday. Y'all are invited to the live broadcast. That's where the national convention is. First of all, that's where our headquarters are. Son, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?
Not you.
Who's your daddy? Alpha.
I'm not a fake, fraudulent commentator on television. See, I don't act. This is real.
Oh, you that stuff on stupid.
His black card is under review right now.
From Washington, D.C., Roland Martin, good morning.
Tom Joyner, good morning. Sybil, good morning. Arsenio Hall, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Glad to chat with you. It's Alpha Week, Tom, all week. Of course, our national convention is in Baltimore. I got Scott Bolden, who's next to me, of course, an attorney. He's a Kappa. I keep telling him Alpha's his daddy, too. We'll be in Baltimore all week. I'll be giving the closing brotherhood speech on Saturday. Scott, you might want to listen to that. We'll be also broadcasting live News 1 Now Friday from the Hilton Baltimore. So the public is invited. So y'all come on out for our live broadcast. And speaking of great alphas, we have one on the phone line right now, Reverend Dr. William Barber. He is the senior lecturer for Repairs of the Breach, also president, North Carolina State NAACP. And Tom, all the people talking, the Senate comes back today to Washington, D.C. Why couldn't they stay out any longer? And so they may deal with this health care bill. Yesterday, Senator John McCain said it's all but dead, but all but dead ain't dead. And so the question is, we must continue to make these phone calls to ensure this bill does not get passed. Let's bring up Dr. Barber right now. Reverend Dr. Barber, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Doc. 06. 06, Tom.
Reverend Barber, okay. It is stunning when you look at Republicans who went home for the 4th of July weekend, and they got an earful, especially from a lot of these white folks in rural parts of their states. You saw it in North Carolina for the last several years when they wouldn't have Medicaid expansion, rural hospitals shut down. Senators in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, Ohio, they heard a whole lot. All of a sudden, white folks are waking up to the reality of what this health care bill will do to them.
That's right. 22 million people, 17 million of them are white. While in the 20-some states that denied Medicaid expansion before we even got to this debate, 6 out of 10 black people live in those states, but the majority of the people that will be hurt are actually poor and working for white people. And so in reality, what they've done, Roland, most of these people got into office through racist gerrymandering, many of them racist gerrymandering and voter suppression. So they used race to get into office, but now they're using the power that they got through racism to hurt mostly poor white people.
But do these poor white people know, Dr. Barber? do these poor white people know what's happening to them?
Well, many of them are actually waking up. We in North Carolina, 65% of the people that went to jail with us to the mall Monday were actually white. And many of them are beginning to see that we're having rallies. They're pushing in our state. You know, Tom Tillis and Burr are catching. In fact, today at 6 o'clock, they're having a mall Monday on Burr's office, and they're raising three things. Burr blocked two black women from getting on the federal court. He has said no to restoring the Voting Rights Act, and now he's saying no to health care. People are starting to make the connection all over the country that if you scratch a racist, you find a liar. Mm-hmm. Just like if you scratch a thief, find a liar, you find a thief. And so these folk have used racism, but in reality, what they're doing is hurting more poor white people than they are after. Now, it's more of us percentage-wise within our race, but in raw numbers, more white people are actually being hurt.
And Reverend Barber, last night I was tweeting back and forth with Chris Hayes of MSNBC, and we were talking about this opioid crisis, and he said that essentially we haven't seen the denial of anything like this since the AIDS epidemic. I said, no, don't you dare skip over the crack cocaine epidemic. And what I said is this here. And this is part of the problem. You know, all of these white voters in West Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in mm-hmm. Kentucky, decrying the opioid crisis. And guess what? They're going to get screwed when it comes to all this Medicaid money getting pulled off the table, $700-800 billion. And they're voting against their own interests. So you can't tell me how, oh, my God, that crisis issue is so important, yet they keep getting their buttons pushed on illegal immigration, on law and order, which really is attack on Black Lives Matter. That's what this boils down to.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why, Bob, we're doing this book. People's campaign, a national call for a moral revival. We've got to change this conversation from left and right, Democrat, Republican, and really get at the heart of the issue. When you connect systemic racism, systemic poverty, they are all connected. And what I'm beginning to see is many people are starting to say, wait a minute, and this health care thing, while it is bad, it is penetrating. It is opening this conversation up. It is helping people to begin to see that you cannot separate the issue of racism and classism. In fact, Roland, you take, for instance, this voter fraud case committed that they now have. It is the mother of all frauds. What it is, the reality is that it's another scam. It's another distraction. What we ought to be dealing with is voter suppression. And voter suppression is not just about black people. It's targeted at black people. But then the people who end up getting power use that power to hurt blacks and poor whites and everybody else. There's a study right now where the Brennan Center said there's 16 seats in the United States Congress that probably wouldn't be Republican if we did not have voter suppression and racial gerrymandering. And recently we have had the Supreme Court agree with us in North Carolina, and it was unanimous. When the racists start saying that the racists are racist, we really got a problem. You know, and it was a unanimous decision that on voter suppression and gerrymandering, we need to shut down, Tom, that committee. We need to start a campaign to shut down that vote integrity committee if they're not going to deal with the issue of racial gerrymandering and voter suppression.
Reverend Barber, keep putting the pressure on them. We will keep highlighting this because, again, we need folks to continue to call the United States Senate. I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's a Republican who represents you.
That's
you
right.
Put that phone call in. Tell them. The number to call is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Call your member of Congress in the House and the Senate.
We're marching on McConnell's office Thursday morning, Roland. Thursday morning. Black, white, Jew, Christian, Muslim. We're marching on his office.
And our cameras will be there. Reverend Barber, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. 1-9? All right.
When racist.
Okay.
When racist, I call another racist. We got a problem.
We do have a problem.
Huggy next, 26 past the hour.
Todd, thanks a lot, folks. When we come back, Black Twitter blasted Dr. Umar Johnson after his interview on The Breakfast Club. I'm going to ask him about a bunch of questions that folks want to have asked. He is up next. Also, boxing for fitness. We'll discuss the benefits coming up. Long Victoria Burke can't wait for that segment. It is 26 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now.
The State Department says it is working with authorities in Greece after a 22-year-old African-American tourist was beaten to death by a group of about 10 men outside of a bar. Bakari Henderson was in a bar with friends on the island of Zakynthos when another customer approached him and a fight ensued. The two were asked to leave, but the fight continued outside and more people began punching Henderson. Police found him dead when they arrived. At least 8 people have been taken into custody, including the bartender and the bouncer. Surveillance videos show the suspects beating Henderson even after he was unconscious. Henderson's family says he was in Greece for a photo shoot to launch his new clothing line. In a statement, the family said, quote, Bakari loved spending time with family and friends, traveling and meeting new people. He was a big thinker and enjoyed coming up with new business ventures. Bakari was an inspiration to all he met.
We were just all in disbelief and shock that that could happen to Bakari. We've just been trying to share really positive memories of Bakari because there's so many. And, you know, we've even had a couple smiles of all the joy that Bakari's brought to our lives.
Again, Bakari Henderson was from Austin, Texas, and he is a recent graduate of the University of Arizona. All right, folks, Dr. Umar Johnson recently was on 105.1 FM out of New York, The Breakfast Club, with DJ Envy, Angela Yee, and Charlamagne Tha God. During the interview, Johnson talked about a whole range of issues. It led to him being the talk of Black Twitter last week, and a lot of people were questioning his educational credentials.
Now, people ask me, what can we expect from a Donald Trump White House for Black America? And the answer is real simple. You can expect exactly what you got from a Obama White House. Absolutely nothing. Black people know they're not American, but they will fight like hell to protect that identity because they don't want to be identified with who they really are, and that's being African. As long as you have a skill, you can always feed your family. But if all you got is college degrees, you might end up in the unemployment line. I'm a psychologist. Ain't too many Black people running around looking for a psychologist to reveal all the skeletons in their closet.
All right, folks, joining us right now, Dr. Umar Johnson. Welcome back to the show. First and foremost, it was amazing looking at this whole reaction. I mean, I'm sitting here, again, people asking all kind of questions. Things are blowing up. And so many people jumped on saying he's not a real doctor. Okay. Where did you graduate from and you got your Ph.D.?
My undergraduate education was from Millersville University. 3 degrees, political science, psychology, master's in school psychology. Subsequent to that, Pennsylvania certification as a school psychologist, which I've been for almost 20 years. After that, I got my educational leadership master's degree and principal certificate from Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I earned my doctorate degree from the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, American Psychological Association approved program, one of the top psychology training programs on the East Coast. 6 degrees in all. And anyone can lift up a telephone and call and verify those degrees.
So when you see folks who question your degrees, your response?
It's because my narrative is a whole lot different from the average mainstream Black scholar. I don't parrot the narrative that the American social order wants Black scholars to parrot. I tell the truth. I don't scratch unless I itch, and I don't dance unless I like the music. And because they're not used to having someone with a traditional education posit non-traditional views, people will automatically start to question his credentials. How did he get this far believing what he believes in? Well, you have to play the spook who sat by the door. When I got accepted into those 3 universities, they didn't know what I believed in. They didn't know what I stood for. But as time went on, it revealed itself. But I'm unapologetically African, so I'm not really concerned with what people think about me personally. I have a job to do, and that is to awaken the sleeping consciousness of African people, not just in America, but all across the world.
One of the things that you said during the interview, you said that Mandarin was one of the official languages in South Africa.
Yes, sir.
And others said you were dead wrong.
Yes, because I didn't clarify that I was speaking of it being an official language in the public school system of South Africa. So I should have clarified that Mandarin is an official language in the Republic of South Africa's school system. It's not an official language in the country. It's an official language in the school system. And I was speaking of schools, but I didn't clarify that. So that's my responsibility.
During that particular interview, you talked about a variety of issues that also got people talking. One of them dealt with your views on interracial marriage.
Yes, sir.
And so so explain that to folks who did not hear it.
Certainly. Simply put, any Black man who is with a woman who's not an African herself is going to have a difficult time getting respect from me. I believe black men need to be with black women. The black family is under attack. Only one out of every four black women gets married. The black woman is last likely to get married. She's the last married, the first divorced. We have, what, two-thirds of our children being raised by working class and impoverished single black female-led households. The destruction of a nation begins in the home of its families. And if we want to save black people, we have to save the black family. So, and in order to do that, black men have to commit themselves to black women.
So when you talk about not getting your respect, so if that's the case, you're saying send Barack Obama to, excuse me, President Barack Obama to get your respect because his dad married a white woman?
Oh, not at all.
Would Harry Belafonte?
Not at all. I want to be very clear about something. As Pan-Africanists, the product of an interracial union is an African. I have heroes who are biracial. Some of the grandfathers of Pan-Africanism were of mixed racial ancestry. You don't blame a child for how they got here.
But I'm asking you this here. Harry Belafonte has a white wife. No respect for him?
Sidney, it would Poitier, be very, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter your social status.
No. I didn't say social. I'm talking about the one who put the work
in. Right, but you put him out.
No. I'm asking you. So, mm-hmm. Harry Belafonte.
Yes, sir.
Sidney Poitier, Julian Bond, Vernon Jordan.
And you're naming all them to say what?
No, these are all African American men
who have done some good things.
Who have married white women. But you said any black man who marries a white woman will not get your respect.
Can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
And what I'm telling you is this. I don't care who you name. I don't care how much work you did for black people. Your greatest commitment to black people is being committed to a black woman. It is still a contradiction. No matter how much you think you did for the struggle, if you really were concerned with black people, you would have committed yourself to a black woman. So it doesn't matter how successful they are. It doesn't matter how great you may claim them to be. At the end of the day, you didn't think enough about your own people to marry a woman who looks like you.
Frederick Douglass.
Yes, sir. An ancestor of mine.
So when you say ancestor, what does that mean?
Let me break it down.
Because, again, some have said you tried to claim that you are a descendant of Frederick Douglass.
Okay. So let's deal with that.
So hold on one second. Here's a statement from the family. Let me go ahead and read this, please. The family of Frederick Douglass has received numerous inquiries about Umar Johnson questioning his relationship to Frederick Douglass. There have also been questions about his legitimacy of his PhD and the handling of the donations he's received for his school that he is promoting. We can tell you with 100% certainty that he is not a descendant of Frederick Douglass. With that being said, Mr. Johnson is very careful not to bill himself as a descendant, but he doesn't correct people when they refer to him in this way. He calls himself a blood relative, which is a nebulous reference designed to make people think he is a descendant. We have researched his explanation of being a blood relative to the great abolitionist. Some of the information he provides is accurate, but an extremely important piece of his explanation with regards to a documented relative of Frederick Douglass is false. The information he recites correctly is from the public record, so his knowledge of our family ancestry is far from definitive proof.
Two things there. One, he's not a descendant of Frederick Douglass, okay? I would concur with that, all right? But then two, you also heard that some of the things he says is correct. So the question becomes, he's either related or he's not, okay?
So are you related?
I'm about to answer your question if you allow me to do that. I am a blood relative of Frederick Douglass. My name is on the family tree. We have a family reunion every 2 years. What they're talking about, and I want to make sure you're clear, they're talking about whether or not I come through the loin of Frederick Douglass, which I do not, nor have I ever claimed, okay? I have more videos on YouTube than any other scholar. I speak around the world more than any other scholar. Show me where I've ever said I was a descendant. I've only claimed one thing, kinsmen. How are my kinsmen? If you ever read any of the autobiographies of Frederick Douglass, he talks about growing up on Tuckahoe Creek with Cousin Stephen. Cousin Stephen is Stephen Bailey, Dr. Umar Johnson's four times great-grandfather, whose grave I just visited last week. I go every year. Okay, that's my four times great-grandfather. He married my four times great-grandmother, Caroline Wilson Bailey. From that union came my three times great-grandfather, George Washington Bailey, the first black public school teacher on Eastern Shore, Maryland. He married Grandmom Annie. They had Grandmom Caroline. Okay, she had Grandma Vivian. Grandma Vivian married a Spanish-speaking Cuban immigrant, Grandpa Cicero. They had Grandmom Ida, who's still alive, who married James Johnson, who had my father Jamal, who married my mama Barbara, and from that union I was born. I am a blood of Belly. I am not married in. What they're talking about is strictly descendancy, something I've never claimed. Am I akin? Do I directly come from the loin of the first cousin and potentially half-brother of Frederick Douglass? And the reason I say potentially, the slave master who owned our family, a white man named Aaron Anthony, raped Frederick's mother and raped Stephen's mother, my ancestor. And there's significant evidence to suggest that. Some people could still argue, though, that they were not brothers because it's not conclusive. Fine, throw that out. I'm still a kinsman because I come through the blood of his first cousin.
You talked about, again, respect. Do you respect?
I don't talk about respect. I get tremendous respect from my people.
I'm not talking about that. Do you respect Frederick Douglass?
Obviously, yes.
But he had a white wife.
He did.
So that's what I'm trying to try.
I'm going to clarify.
Why is that an issue? Why is that? If you put in the work and you have the history, who cares who you marry?
I already answered that question, and I told you, I don't care how much work you put in. If you don't commit yourself to a black woman, ultimately you wasn't totally committed to the struggle.
Even Frederick Douglass.
Even Frederick Douglass has to be criticized, as I did on The Breakfast Club. Now, it has to be put in context. He didn't marry the white woman until he was an old man, after his wife, Anna Murray Douglass, of 50 years, a blue-black chocolate woman through whom all my cousins were born. He was an old man when he did it, but nonetheless, he did it. And yes, he has to be criticized on that, because a black man needs to be with a black woman, and it is a contradiction. I don't care how much work you think you've done for black folks to not commit yourself to a black woman.
Hold tight 1 second. I got more questions when we come back. Also, our panel has some questions as well. It is 19. Laura, you guys. Yeah.
I got a few questions.
Yeah, 19 on top of the hour. TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
I would argue the reason black men marry white women is because they wish they were white themselves. And having the white man's prize, his queen, is a psychological symbol to myself that I am equal to him.
We're back with Dr. Umar Johnson. In that particular statement, the family also addressed this here. You talked about taking over the buildings or the land of a black school that was shut down.
Yes, HBCU, sir. St. Paul's College.
And you were raising money for it. First of all, how much money has been raised, and what's the status of that project?
Well, St. Paul's has been sold. Approximately 3 to 5 months ago, I was told by the auction company in charge of the sale that it was been sold to a developer.
So how much money was raised, people gave, how much was raised, and what's the status of that?
$700,000, and the status is we're still looking for a school, and the status is my start date for FDMG will be 8/21/18, or if at all, it may be delayed to 8/21/19, which is the anniversary of the Nat Turner War.
When you say looking for a school, why not start a charter school? I mean, you can start a school.
Because charter schools are owned by the state, and I'm a Pan-Africanist. I believe what is to be done for black people must be done by black people. Why do I want a charter school?
So you want a private school?
Exactly. Independent school.
Lauren.
So the question of interracial marriage, come on, man. You're too smart for this. We got 43.
I'm too smart for what?
We got 43 million black people in this country.
And that
we got
means
over
what?
190 million white people. You're going to sit here and say that if
like
a black person,
black
or white person get married, a black person, a white person get married, one can't understand the other person's struggle. You've seen Tim Wise, right? You've seen Reverend Wallace. You've seen white people who understand racism very well.
That doesn't mean they're going to do anything about it.
The other thing that is obviously true is they understand racism when you see things like the murder of Medgar Evers, like the murder of Martin Luther King. They understand racism.
And what did they do about it?
They understand us gaining just fine, and that's why murder happened.
Based on what?
So the idea that somehow a white person can't understand our struggle?
I could care less what they understand. I'm asking you, what have they done systematically to improve the opportunities of white folks? He did not tell me that.
Oh, yes, you did tell me
that. He did not tell me that.
You're going to tell me that guys like Tim Wise and Reverend Wallace don't understand race in America?
What about Tim Wise?
They don't understand race in America?
He articulates racism, but what has he done?
There are no white people that understand race in America.
There's not a white person in America.
There's no white people understand race in America.
There's not a white person.
Them going to Eugene.
There's not a white person in America who has ever worked to systematically eliminate the white privilege that they benefit from vis-a-vis your oppression.
You're lying.
You know,
190
million people in America.
Eugene.
Oh, we're not going to go there. We're not.
Called me a liar, and you're cool.
Well, it's a fact that
watch
you're lying.
Watch how you talk
it's
to me.
It's a fact that you're lying. It's a fact that you're lying.
I understand you.
To say that.
No, everybody, 1 second. Several things I don't allow. I don't allow the N-word. I don't allow coon.
We can talk to one another and disagree, but I do not use racial epithets against
and
black
that's
people.
That's fine, but he called
no,
me
no,
a liar.
No.
So the language
racial epithets will not be used on this show.
And that's fine.
By anybody.
But how we talk to each other needs
you
to
can
be
say whatever you want, but no racial epithets will be used on this show about black people to black people. Eugene, your question.
So from your paradigm, from your perspective, civil rights acts isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Current criminal justice reform legislation moving isn't a current act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. Folk that funded the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s isn't an act of white folk stepping up on behalf of black folk. I'm sorry, as an American, because I define myself as an American, an African-American.
I'm sure you do.
I live in a country that moves forward together. And I say that as a Republican. We move forward together. Yes, we have individual struggles. Yes, we have struggles.
I'm not talking
yes,
about
we have,
individual
yes, no. Yes, we have,
talking about
we have
systematic.
We have, we have systematic.
Okay, this is proportionality.
Finish it 15 seconds. And
we have systematic struggles. And together as a country, moving forward to defeat those struggles.
Really? So based on what you said, I want you to give me examples of white folk, not individuals, but systematically.
Why can't it be individuals?
Excuse me.
Why can't they be individuals?
One second,
I know you can't wait to finish.
One second answer.
Can I finish?
Go.
Okay, I'm going. Okay? You cannot name anything systematically done ever in this country by white people to equal the playing field for black folks.
The Civil Rights Act, Congress literally sits behind us. The Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act.
Are you aware?
Hey, can I, both of them.
White people
second.
Are proud of you, son.
Let me ask you Scott Bolden.
Real quick. I think the terminology and the narrative being used is a little misleading, not from you, but from this dialogue right here.
Okay.
You know, it's one thing to sympathize with the struggle. It's another one to empathize with the struggle. Very different. When you talk about marriage being a political choice, and that one of the things, arguments that you made that I tend to agree with is that if you don't marry a black woman, then she can never support and comfort and value your day-to-day struggle as a black man. That being said, I do think that the level of the rhetoric that you use in regard to your Pan-Africanism is difficult for many of us, quote, in the mainstream, to get our arms around. But this issue about black men and white women in the civil rights struggle is not a new discussion. My mother was a civil rights activist in Chicago, and she would often complain privately that, one, you can't sleep black, you can't sleep white and talk black,
Thank
if you,
you
will. And
Thank
that's
you.
Always been in the American struggle, American, African-American struggle with ourselves.
Yes, sir.
The other thing is that we struggle with our own psychology about self-love and otherwise. And if we get our arms around that, that does make sense.
Okay?
But you would have to say that you know 190 million people.
But you're being too
one second.
You would have to claim that.
Individuals don't matter.
You'd have to claim
that. No, go ahead and respond. Go ahead.
And I agree with my brother's
Scott.
Comments.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Scott, he brought up the Civil Rights Bill. But what he did not talk about in relation to the Civil Rights Bill is there were two words included in that bill that ultimately served to take away from black people what that bill was intended to deliver. They added gender and they added sexual orientation. And as a result of that, white women and homosexuals have been able to strip black America from the intended gains of the Civil Rights Act. So there was still racism in that bill if you will study that history.
But Umar, your question was, has anyone black ever systematically done, has anyone white ever systematically
not
done anything?
Systematically. White America.
So LBJ would be the answer for that.
No,
because that's the government.
No, I don't think you
that's
heard the
question. That's a systematic move.
No, you didn't hear the question.
You did not. Yeah,
you're
I
so quick to defend white folks that you're not listening.
No, I'm not trying to defend white folks.
I literally have 45 seconds, so restate the question and give the answer.
Okay.
I got 45
right,
seconds.
Let's get an answer.
The question was, what has white America done?
Right.
Not individuals. Systematically.
Cannot.
You won't even let me finish.
Yeah, because
you're that in love with white folks, you won't even let me finish.
Point on everything.
Finish literally 20 seconds.
There is no bigger system than the
20 seconds, I'll finish.
Go.
And in 20 seconds, I would say that the panel that you have here, who are extremely intelligent, do not represent the everyday black man and woman struggles, and because of that, they cannot articulate.
And you represent 43 million people
right,
in this country?
I don't think so.
Thanks so much.
Don't
love
it. Come back, you are fitness. Fitness win. Next, News One Now TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Sad news. Nelson Ellis, the actor best known for his role in HBO's True Blood, has died at the age of 39. Ellis, of course, his co-star on The Help, Octavia Spencer, broke the news on Instagram Saturday morning. A portion of her post said, "Just got word that we lost Nelson. My heart breaks for his kids and family. He died of heart failure, complications from heart failure." He also, of course, starred as Lafayette Reynolds on HBO's True Blood for 80 episodes over the span of 7 seasons. He also played, of course, Bobby Byrd in the movie Get On Up about James Brown. And, of course, he played Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Lee Daniels' The Butler. Again, Nelson Ellis, 39 years old. So it's certainly sad to see a talented actor lost at such a young age. Folks, every Monday we talk about Fit, Live, Win, and we're trying to keep you healthy and well, and we have different ways to do so. Today we're going to talk about the idea of boxing, specifically the benefits for women. That's right. Laura just finished having some boxing match right there. And so let's get right to it. Our guests, ladies are lacing it up. Our guest, of course, will talk about the importance of boxing. She joins us right now. And welcome to the show, celebrity fitness trainer and fitness personality, Jessica Lange. Jessica, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
So how long you been boxing?
About 3 to 4 years consistently. I wanted to box when I was younger, and then when I went to Spelman, I graduated from high school. Of course, your parents don't want you to box, like, especially their baby girl. So then when I went to college, when I got to college, I got a job. I'm just a persistent person. So I got a job just to pay for it, and then was doing it ever since.
So what attracted you to boxing? What did you get out of it?
You know, that's one of those questions I always get. I just always loved the idea of boxing. I was
what,
young.
You want to hit somebody?
No.
Is that what it is?
Not even that. It was just fascinating to me. Like, as a child, I would scroll through the TV and watch boxing while my sister would watch cartoons, and I was obsessed with Leila Ali. So, like, as a young girl, to know this beautiful woman had the ability to do what she does, it was fascinating to me.
So, for women out there who are going, Jessica, you've lost your mind, what would you tell them they could actually get out of it?
So that's the thing. I was training for the Olympics. I lost in the Olympic trials, unfortunately, but it's okay because, you know, every loss is always a set for a comeback. Mm-hmm. But so it's one of those things that you always have to follow your passion. Like, people will always say, oh, because you're a woman, you won't be successful, or whatever the case may be. But when you think about it, history isn't made until somebody makes it. So that's always been my idea.
Absolutely. You know, on the boxing piece, I do kickboxing and Thai boxing 3 or 4 times a week. Actually, it's a great not only fat burn.
We have no evidence. We have no evidence of Scott actually doing that.
Where's the camera? Right.
No, we have no evidence of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have no. Scott,
let me talk to my spell.
We never. I talk to my spell. Video.
Look at it, man. Put the camera here.
Scott has the greatest repertoire.
Right there. Right there. No. I've lost. But here's the thing.
Don't know what
it is a great stress reliever, I found, for men and women.
It is.
Some mornings, me and my wife do it with our trainer.
I can lower my stress by knocking the hell out of Scott right now.
But it's a great fat burner, but it's also a total body workout, and that de-stresses you.
Absolutely.
Can you comment on that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's something that people do every day in order to relieve stress. It releases, and it helps you also with your endorphins, you know, even when it comes to cardiovascular health, because there's so many health disparities within our community that when you try to think of something, so many people are like, oh, I don't want the strain of working out. I don't want to go work out because it's like I don't have the motivation or whatever the case may be. So when you think about trying to combat your stress or any daily activities that you may be dealing with, it's just one of those easy ways to just let go and let loose.
Right. Lauren?
Like, when you do these workouts, how long does a typical boxing workout last?
Well, when I was training for the Olympics, I trained literally 3 hours in the morning.
Oh, hell.
From 2 hours in the evening.
I'm talking about the how long should the workout be?
One hour. But the thing is, it's something that's so fun that it relieves your mind, so you don't think that you're actually working out. I mean, of course, you'll get tired. You'll get tired.
Right. You know, we're so
tired.
You know, the whole thing is, you know. Oh, my God.
So think about, like, somebody stresses you out, right? The first thing you do, you get angry or whatever the case may be.
And we put
Roland's finger up when
you know, Jessica,
go
long. Jessica, you know, doggone well, if you working out for an hour, you know, man, when is workout over?
This is the thing.
I'm working out in an hour and a half. I guarantee you.
Oh, my God.
I ain't going to hit an hour and go,
oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing.
No, that's not what I said at all. Think about if you go out and dance or whatever the case may be. You're actually working out, but in your mind you're dancing.
Baby,
but
that's
you're
dancing.
Not.
That's dancing.
And he swears he's the best dancer in the world.
That's dancing. You're going to the bar, Scott gets some chicken wings. Trust me, it ain't just dancing. First of all, how can folks reach you? Learn more about boxing.
After all that.
www.fightforyourlife.org is my website. They can also reach me through social media at It's Jessica Lane. I only have an Instagram. I don't have Twitter, unfortunately.
What is wrong with you?
The reason being is because my demographic group.
Your demographic group.
I'm just saying.
Let me help you out real quick. Every demographic group is on every platform. So don't be trying to see him.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Happy birthday to Chiwetel Ejiofor. He turns 40 years old today. Tomorrow I'll see you guys. More Alpha Week on here. Scott, suck it up.
Orlando.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.